Chapter 1 Little Mountain. "Where shall we start?" Selene asked, dragging one sharp fingernail along the stone. "Shall we speak of my childhood in Lawson? Of those sun-bright years before Day's death found us, and my brother and I learned to loathe each other? Shall we pretend any of it matters?"
"To discern the pattern in the threads, one must study the tapestry entire."
Jean-Francois offered the most charming smile of his arsenal.
"And, as I told your brother, in my not inconsiderable experience, histories are best begun at their beginning.
For creatures such as you and he, but there is an ocean between you and I, sinner."
"You wield that word as if you intend insult," the historian mused. "Yet in your brief and full of years, you have been the architect of more atrocity than most ancient I know of. There is a saying about glass houses and thrown stones.
There be no room for sin in a heart filled with the fire of God."
Jean-Francois frowned at the unfamiliar quote. "The Book of Vows?"
"No."
The historian tapped his quill against his lip. "You are still of the delusion, I take it, that the cause of the faithless was righteous. How to rationalize that, given the enormity of your failure? If you were chosen of God, as the insane ramblings of your priory claimed, how is it that Ilya and every one of her followers now rots in a well-deserved hell?"
"Not everyone," Selene replied.
"True. You rot in my empress's cellar instead."
"I am where God wishes me to be." The Marquis chuckled.
"I was under the impression, mademoiselle, that we all are."
"You introduce yourself as historian, yet you call us faithless. That name is a lie. If you were worthy of the title you lay claim to, you would know that."
"I know that history is written by the victors, and the Esani were far from that."
"This war is not over yet."
"Forgive me."
Jean-Francois smiled, motioning to the bare rock around them.
"The world must look very different on your knees."
"It does. That is why we pray there, little one."
Jean-Francois's temper prickled at that. "Little one, you are younger than I, girl."
"Girl?" The prisoner tilted her head.
"Come here and call us that."
The historian stared at the vampire across the water. She still lingered at the very edge of the shore, as if she desired to be as close to him as possible. Her gaze was locked on his, midnight blue hair framing the silvered cage on her jaw, her eyes as dark as his dame's, flooded to their edges, black and bottomless. If he stared too long, he felt he might drown in them, sinking into the cool dark of oblivion, just as he'd done the night his mother murdered him, on her knees before him, ruby lips grazing his skin, and teeth sinking deep, pain entwined with awful pleasure as the heat was dragged up from his... "No. Stop. Stop," he hissed. Jean-Francois blinked. He realized he stood where once he'd sat. His boots were poised at the river's edge now, dark current tumbling just beyond his toes. No kith could cross running water save at bridges or by flying high above it. But had he taken one more step, he might have tumbled in,
swept along in that flood as the flesh washed off his bones. And the terrible thing was, he'd wanted to, because she'd willed him to. The historian looked back up into those bottomless eyes, a jolt of perfect fear arcing all the way down his spine. His teeth grew long and sharp in his gums. "Impressive," Selene whispered.
"Do not do that again," he snapped,
"or I swear by the night I will leave you here to languish until your screams can be heard all the way to Augustine." Selene upturned her palms in supplication, her eyes hard as black pearls. "Forgive us." The historian returned to his chair, opened his tome, and took the space of 3 breaths to find his composure. The contempt he had felt mere moments ago was replaced with fury and dread now, with some small understanding of this thing lurking on the far shore. There was a reason his empress did not wish to conduct this interrogation herself. A reason why Selene Castilla had been buried in the darkest pit his dame could conjure. She might have the appearance of a maid from a Nordland backwater. She might have but a handful of years to her name. And had he tumbled into those black waters, still she would have been imprisoned here, helpless on that dark shoreline. But that would have been small comfort to his corpse. Looking again into those jet-black eyes, Jean-Francois at last understood. Trapped and cornered though it might be, this thing is dangerous. "What did my brother tell you of our childhood?" she asked. The historian licked at dry lips, sipping from the goblet of blood beside him.
"You grew up in the Nordish provinces," he replied, "the youngest daughter of Raphael Castilla and Auriel de Lyon. He, a blacksmith, a cur, fond of his oars and liquor, and beating his children. She, the noble daughter of a baron, a lioness, who did her best to raise her children in the light of one faith."
A chuckle rang behind that silver muzzle. "Is that what Gabriel told you?" Jean-Francois blinked.
"You sing a different tune?"
"My mother was no lioness, sinner. Auriel de Lyon was a prideful, cosseted brat. My father did what few men would have in marrying a woman heavy with a monster's child, and she repaid him with nothing but scorn. It was in Gabriel that Mama placed the fullness of her faith, her time, her love. For the rest of us, she left scraps and named it a feast." The monster shook her head, dragging nails across the stone. "My father was no cur either," she said. "He had a good heart, Raphael Castilla. Even as a child, I could see what it was doing to him, to be unwelcome in the bed he'd built with his own 2 hands. He was a big man, strong as an ox, yet ever he walked like he carried a weight upon his back. He drank too much, he strayed too far. No saint, my papa, but still he tried. And he never laid a hand on my mother, or my sister, or me. But he beat Gabriel like a disobedient stepchild." Selene nodded, eyes glittering in the dark. "Because he was one Chastain. My mother filled my brother's head with such rot he could not help himself, feeding the fire of his pride until it burned bright enough to blind him." The historian pursed his lips.
Your brother spoke quite a different tale.
Of course he did. No matter how oft he makes mention of them, Gabriel's greatest love has never been liquor, nor licentiousness. It is lying.
Jean-Francois frowned, glancing toward the tower high above.
Let us speak plainly, little Marquis,
Selene said, entwining fingers in her lap.
Your Empress would kill us if she dared. She cares not where I came from, nor what we became. Margot Chastain desires Selene Castille's story only insofar as it is also another's. La Demoiselle de Graal, the Red Hand of God. We were there the day the name Saint Dior was first sung to the heavens, and we heard what heaven sang in reply. So while histories are best begun at their beginning, and while my sweet brother enjoys little more than talking about himself, let us assume you are here at purpose other than the assuagement of my ego, and allow us to impart the tale your mistress actually wishes to hear.
Selene leaned back, legs stretched out before her, palms flat to the stone.
We assure you, you will learn all you need to know of us in the telling of it.
The historian inclined his head, lifted his quill.
As it please you, Mademoiselle Castilla.
So,
the monster lowered her chin, watching the historian through the dark haze of her lashes.
Where did my beloved Gabriel leave you?
The bridge at Kienheim,
Jean-Francois replied.
You had sought an ancient of the Esani among the peaks of the Nightstone, but found him dead by his own hand, and in turn been found by pursuers of two different courts of the blood. In an astonishing display of strength for a vampire her age, the wolf mother had done away with the terrors, but only you and Gabriel remained to defend Dior against the Divok, and you betrayed him.
Betrayed, the monster sighed. Dear brother, dear liar.
You deny you let him fall.
We say only that a traitor has no right to bleat when he feels the knife in his own back, and that my brother let me fall long before we deigned to return the favor.
You thought it wise to fight alone?
I had been alone most of my life, sinner. Why would that night be any different? The hell I had seen, the places I had been, I knew what Selene Castilla was made of.
And that was?
The monster gazed into the rushing waters, those black eyes suddenly far away.
My mother and I were in a fight once, years after the sun failed, this was. A rough and tumble scrap of a girl I was back then, all skinned knees and scuffed knuckles. A fool might have called me a tomboy if he held no regard for his teeth.
My 11th Saint's Day was coming, and I'd asked for a belt knife like Papa and the other men of Lawson carried. Mama told me I was getting a new dress. We fought about it for weeks, but she'd not give an inch, insisting I must set aside childish fancy and learn what it was to be a woman. Grow up, she'd tell me. God's sakes, Selene, grow up.
The monster looked down at her body, frozen forever at childhood's edge.
In tears I sought Papa. I found him in his forge as ever, bent over the refuge of his anvil, and I asked how he could stand it, to live like that, to live with her. He thumbed the sweat from his brow and smiled.
What is the name of our famille, daughter?
Castilla, I replied.
In old Nordish, it means castle. And are castles made of steel?
No, Papa.
Are they made, then, of ice?
Castles are stone, Papa.
Good. And what are castles for?
Princesses live in them, I scowled. They go to stupid dances and dine with stupid princes and wear stupid dresses. He laughed, and he put down his hammer and lifted me in his big, broad arms. He was a giant, my papa, a rock, strong as the roots of the earth.
Castles endure, love. They weather storm and fire and blood. Steel rusts. Ice melts, but stone stands. And that is what we do. We stand the weight, that others might be spared the burden. We endure the unendurable.
He smoothed back the hair from my face, Nordish fire burning in his eyes.
Castles are made of stone, little mountain, and so are you.
Selene stared silent into that water, perfectly motionless. And so, she finally sighed, when faced with opportunity at Cairnheim to rid ourselves of my fool brother and blame it on battle's tide, we took our chance. His arm was shattered, his sword gone. That accursed light on his skin made it just as difficult for us to see as our foes. And even if he lived, the thirst in Gabriel was growing every day. It was only a matter of time before he fell into it. All things weighed. We were better off without him. Jean-Francois raised his quill, frowning.
Forgive me, Mademoiselle Castilla, but I am a touch confused. When you say we, do you mean you and Dior, or
I mean us, sinner? The last Liathe took in her body with a wave of one slender hand. All of us. The historian met her gaze, lightless and deep as hell. He remembered Gabriel's tale of the Battle of Avelin, of Richard Divock being drunk to ashes. He recalled the atrocities attributed to the Isani during the Red Crusade, and looking into the black of this monster's eyes, he wondered just how many monsters were looking back at him. The bridge was smashed in half, Selene continued. The remainder barely clinging to the cliff behind us. Dior scrambled toward the safety of a burning barricade, Gabriel plunging into the abyss below as we hurled ourselves back over the railing and into the fray. And laying eyes upon the wolf mother and headsman, drenched in animal gore, we flicked our wrist and willed our blood blade back into being.
Sanguimancy,
the historian murmured. The monster glanced up at that, a sly glint in her eyes. The gift of the faithful, mastery of the blood itself. Are you curious about its workings, sinner? She nodded to the bottle beside her. We'd give demonstration, if you'd be kind enough to fetch us another draught. The Marquis ignored those dark eyes fixed on his neck.
The blade was made of your blood, then. Wearied as you were, there must not have been much left inside you.
No, the monster replied.
But while the wolf mother's strength was fearsome, the flesh witch had already wounded her deep. And while we were wounded too, the fire of God burned yet in our heart. So we'd thought to quench our thirst presently.
You and your brother do share some kinship, then,
the historian mused.
Meaning what?
Arrogance seems to run in your famille.
It should have worked, Selene snapped, impetuous, voice cutting the dark.
Kiara's blood was thinner than ours. The power of Ancient flows in these veins, and I had delivered dozens of kith just like her during my studies with Master Wulfric, and others far deeper in the blood since.
Selene shook her head, quietly furious.
She should have fallen. But as deep as we stood, Kiara was somehow stronger, far, far stronger than she should have been. Our first blow opened her belly to breast, but her riposte almost smashed us off the bridge. The advantage in speed was ours, but God, the strength in her was unholy. The first blow we turned aside shattered our arm, so we were forced to dodge rather than parry, slipping aside as Kiara threw herself into the booming, sweeping arcs of the tempest. Each near miss from her maul cut the air so swift that thunder rolled in its wake. Her comrade, Cain, was on his feet now too, yet another blade to dance away from, and the wolf mother did not even seem to feel the blows we carved in her flesh. We could not go on like this much longer. And then we caught movement from the corner of our eye, Dior rising to her feet. The girl was gasping, covered in stone dust, blood, ash. But ever dauntless, she drew the silver steel dagger from her sleeve and made ready to step into the fray. I was forced to admire her courage, even as we cursed her foolishness. A thin line is drawn between both, after all, and we wondered if this child would live long enough to learn the difference. No, we cried, holding up our hand. Back, chérie, back! The blink of an eye is enough to alter the course of history. A moment's distraction can mean the difference between life and death. We are creatures who walk between the rain, awake in the forevers between seconds. And as we felt Kiara's grip close around our outstretched arm, we knew in that second what an awful mistake we'd made. Selene Castilla shook her head, her voice grown soft and distant. There is a kind of dog in Oswey called a Kildam, a stag hound. They are rare these nights, expensive to keep, firstly, and there are no stags left to hunt, after all. But the most valuable ones were the females with no toes. Do you know why, historian?
Jean-Francois nodded. Kildam were famed for their ferocity. Breeders would have young females bite into a deer carcass, then haul them skyward and begin snipping their toes off. The more toes a female lost before she released her quarry, the more ferocious her offspring would prove, and the worthier she was judged to breed.
Selene nodded. A good Ossian staghound will die before she releases her prey. And while we never saw Kiara Divok without her boots, we'd not be surprised if you removed them and discovered she had no toes. She slung us around like a bag of rocks, slamming us back and forth into the cracking flagstones, never once releasing her awful grip.
Our arm broke in a half dozen places. Our blade pierced her chest, her throat, but still she didn't let us go. It was our left arm she had us by, and we fought hard as we might, but dazed, skull cracked and racked with pain, we gasped as her fingers finally closed around our sword hand too. Our mask had shattered as she whipped us into the rock, but no matter how we struggled, cursed, her strength was terrible. Impossible. Kiara met our eyes, blood drooling from her teeth as she growled.
This is for cousin Ricard, pretty one.
And rearing back like a serpent, she slammed her forehead into our face. The blow was so terrible it tore our arms clean from their sockets, pulped our skull, sent us sailing back through the air like a blast from a cannon. We crashed into something hard and sharp, smelled something burning, heard someone screaming. So stunned, we barely recognized our name. And it was then we realized the hardness and sharpness we'd crashed into was the last of our flaming barricades, that the voice we heard screaming was Dior's, and the thing we smelled burning was us. It was us. Selene looked down at her hand, flawless and pale.
Have you ever been set aflame, historian?
She asked softly. Jean-Francois didn't look up from his tome, his quill flowing smooth over the page.
A few misadventures with candles in the boudoir notwithstanding. No.
It's awful,
the monster replied, her voice suddenly tiny and frail.
It's as if the Almighty himself were reaching down from heaven to show you how small our kind actually are. All I have given you, he seems to say. All I have made you, strong as 100 men, swift as 1,000 spears, timeless and deathless and fearless. All of it can be undone by the simplest of my gifts. The first I gave to my true children. The gift that kept them warm in the dark at the dawn of time and safe from evil like you. Never forget, the fire tells you. Never forget who he loves most. We barely had sense enough, strength enough, but as those awful flames tore up over our coat, our hair, our flesh, we summoned the very last of our power, and we felt our body tremble and our pieces fly apart, 1,000 tiny droplets bursting into flight, 1,000 tiny wings spiraling up into storming skies. The fire chased us like it had a will to end us, leaping from moth to moth, more of us consumed, ashes drifting earthward like snow. But a few tiny pieces of us escaped, twisting into the night, a blur of consciousness above the burning bridge, the triumphant wolf mother, the cemetery that was Cairnheim. We'd brought Dior to that place, hoping she'd find the ancient wisdom of the faithful, the shelter of Genoa's protection. Instead, she'd found only death, her hopes dashed and her protectors stripped away one by one until she was almost utterly alone. The last Liathe reclined on the cold stone as if a queen on a velvet divan. Slipping her hands beneath her head, one knee crooked, she stared at the dark rock overhead. Again, Jean-Francois was struck with the brief notion she was but a maid,
an innocent, sprawled among the blooms in some flowering field and talking of childish things to childish friends. But he understood something closer to truth now.
"Forgive me, Mademoiselle Castilla," he said. "But if you parted ways with the Grail at Cairnheim, then I fail to see what light you can shed on her story. Perhaps I would be better served returning to the Black Lion's company."
"We are certain you would simply loathe that, sinner." The historian sighed.
"It seems you and your brother share a fondness for sarcasm, as well as arrogance. But when my Empress learns how little use you actually are, you may find yourself wishing you'd put that scalpel tongue of yours to better use."
"And if you stop interrupting us, little Marquis, we shall do exactly that."
"How? Kiora Divoque beat you to a bloody pulp, tore your arms off, and then set you on fire. You barely escaped with your existence. I have no use for hearsay or second-hand babble, and after the thrashing you took, you cannot possibly know what came next."
"Can we not?"
"You said Dior was alone."
"We said she was almost alone. She was many things, Dior Lachance. Oft-times a courageous girl, others a headstrong and terribly foolish girl. She could be a resourceful or cunning or ruthless girl, a hateful girl, a vengeful girl. But above all, sinner, Dior Lachance was always a fortunate girl. And while this seemed her darkest hour, while it seemed she had been left completely bereft, the Almighty had not abandoned her. For the first time since Jean-Francois had met her, the last Liathe laughed, hollow, cold, and utterly unnerving. Even if she did not know it at the time, that girl had one last trick up her sleeve.